What is up, you galled geese of Winchester? Welcome to No Holds Barred, the Shakespeare podcast Shakespeare would have listened to. I'm Dan Bollier.
And I'm Kevin Condardo. We are back this week with our So You're Going to See Shakespeare episode. The idea of this monthly episode is that it's something that you'll listen to in transit to a Shakespearean production so that we can prepare you to be the best little audience member that you can be.
An audio version of the dramaturgical notes, if you will.
So, hopefully you'll enjoy this episode as you head out to see Troilus and Cressida.
Here we go.
First thing we need to cover before we get into this episode is a quick synopsis of the play, so you at least know the story. Daniel, why don't you kick us off?
All right. So we begin with a lovesick Troilus in the middle of the Trojan War, which you may have heard of, who does not want to go to war because he is super in love with Cressida, who you may have heard of, and he feels like he's waited long enough to be with her. So he goes to Pandarus, who is his friend and, wouldn't you know it, Cressida's uncle.
Convenient.
And asks him, hey, can you go tell her how great I am? So he's like, sure. And he is successful, and she secretly admits she's been in love with him all along.
So then we switch over and we look at the Greek leaders, who are kind of infighting among themselves, that they're all from different parts of Greece, and so they have all their things, when a messenger comes from Troy and says that Hector, who is the champion of the Trojans, just a badass,
right.
He's issuing a direct challenge to the greatest fighter the Greeks can put forward. And all of the generals look at each other and they know that Achilles would be the best, he's the best fighter they have,
yeah.
But he's also just a pompous ass. And they can't, they're like, if he loses, we all look like for putting out an ass. And if he wins, he'll be completely unbearable. So
right.
Let's rig this thing so that Ajax goes out and fights. And then they kind of mess with Achilles a little bit.
All right. So then the Trojan leaders convene and discuss the Greeks' offer to end the war if Helen, whose kidnap or escape, as you might think, started the Trojan War, is returned to her husband Menelaus. Cassandra, as it may be, the often ignored fortune teller of Greek mythos, bursts in and tells them Troy will be destroyed if Helen isn't returned. And they, of course, ignore her. Eventually, they decide to keep her there because they stole her in the first place.
Helen.
So they might as well keep her around.
Yeah. Right. Pandarus visits Paris and Helen, who are taking a break from just getting it on. And he asks them permission for Troilus, who wants to skip dinner that night. And they're like, oh, he wants to go hook up with Cressida. And Pandarus is like, definitely not. No, definitely not. He has homework to do, so he's going to miss dinner. He's definitely not going off to hook up with Cressida.
To quote the great license plate, nah, dude. Pandarus then goes straight to Troilus, who is waiting at Cressida's, and basically courts them for each other, culminating in him serving as witness to their pledges to each other and then hustling him off to do some good old-fashioned bed pressing.
Lots of bed pressing references.
Pressing that bed.
We then cut back to Cressida's dad, Calchas, who has Benedict Arnold Troy. And
it's a traitor for our British listeners.
As thanks for his turncoatery, he asks the Greek leaders to trade prisoners so that they can bring Cressida, his daughter, back to him and out of Troy. And they're like, yeah, you've done good. So Agamemnon sends Diomedes to Troy to arrange the transfer.
Right. Troilus and Cressida wake up in a morning after scene, all JBF'd up, and Pandarus comes to break the news that Cressida's about to get traded, which is sort of like Brad Ziegler.
An ingenue to be named later.
That's
is
right.
Going back to the Greeks.
Cressida swears she will not leave, but Troilus, after being commanded by Paris, agrees to hand her over despite the fact that it will pretty much kill him to do so. Troilus and Cressida then swear to be true to each other and figure out ways to see each other even while on opposite sides of the war, which is so sweet, honestly. Mm. And they exchange tokens of love, also known as sleeves, to confirm their pledge.
Is that a condom?
It's a Trojan reference. Troilus delivers Cressida to Diomedes, who immediately starts hitting on her.
Trojan man. Hector and Ajax. The Ajax is representing Greece. Ajax
in
representing
this
Troy. Hector have their duel, and Hector kind of stomps him all over the place, but declines to kill Ajax because they are related, as all of these people tend to be.
Right.
The Greeks are then like, well, you're here, why don't you hang out and have dinner? And they all play nice with each other the night before the war, except for Achilles, who's still that they skipped him for the duel, yep, and says he's gonna kill Hector the next day. And Hector's like, yeah, I got a real bad feeling about you, chief. And so they end dinner, as all good dinners end, by pledging to kill each other the next day.
Do you think that's like a heel move by Achilles?
Oh, absolutely. They're just chilling.
That was also an Achilles heel joke.
Ah!
Ulysses and Troilus spy on the Greek camp and discover Diomedes is super into Cressida, going so far as to take the sleeve, the Trojan man that Troilus mm-hmm. gave her, and saying he will wear it into battle in her honor the next day, which now that I think about that as a condom is really pretty funny. Cressida gives up on Troilus and decides to go, you know what, Diomedes, you're pretty cool, and you're also the closest guy around. Mm. Troilus is pretty pissed.
Kind of setting the movement back there a bit, Cressida. So then finally, in the big battle, everything kind of comes to a head.
Hey!
Heckash! So Hector basically kills a bunch of dudes, and then he's like, yeah, I had a good day. And then the Greeks find him, and he's just sitting on the ground, and they're like, get up, we're going to fight you. He's like, nah, I'm done. And so they just kill him and then stick him on a horse and drag him away. And then Troilus is super angry about it, and he says he's going to be revenged. And Pandarus is like, hey, why don't you calm down? And Troilus is like, nope, I'm going to go get revenge. And then Pandarus is like, it's hard out here arranging marriages. And that's Troilus and Cressida. Now that you know what you'll be watching, we're going to take a few minutes here to talk about where Troilus and Cressida falls in Shakespeare's personal timeline and what was happening in the world when it was written.
Yes.
Daniel.
Yes. So Troilus and Cressida was most likely written in 1602. So this puts us middle Shakespeare, I would say.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
The beginning of mid to late Shakespeare, but right smack dab in the middle. Elizabeth will die the year following.
Spoilers,
1603. 1601. So to speak about 1602 directly, I didn't find a heck of a lot that was going on that year, Kev.
Oh, I did.
You did?
Okay, so...
Well, this is exciting. I have some sandwich theory for you, but I want to hear what happened actually in the year.
Earl of or like pub food?
Earl of.
Sandwich?
Earl of sandwich.
Oh, okay. So when this play was printed, when the quarto was printed in 1609, it was given on the title page, like the slogan that was on it, the big sticker that they put out front in the Barnes & Noble recommended quartos section was a new play, never staled with the stage. So in 1609, this was being marketed as a play Shakespeare wrote as a poem that he had never, that was more to be read than to be staged.
That makes sense to me.
right. But the reason that there's a theory, the reason that they did this was that in 1601...
Yes, this is part of the sandwich of Earl theory.
Okay,
Earl
so go ahead. Theory. Go ahead. Why don't you pick it up, because it could all tie together.
Is it the Earl of Essex?
Yes, that's the one.
Yes. So the Earl of Sandwich, also known as the Earl of Essex, not really, the Earl of Essex dies in 1601, mm-hmm. Is killed after a failed rebellion. And so the theory is that the mood in Elizabethan England sort of turned against this whole notion of chivalric ideals or militaristic heroism, and that was being called into major question. And then all of a sudden you had these pieces that were being written that also called the ideas of military heroism and chivalristic ideals into question.
And also more directly, Shakespeare had kind of ball-washed Essex in Henry V.
Can we get one of those ball wash sound effects from WWEEI here?
Yes, from the golf course.
Yes.
And then, obviously, Essex revolted against the king, which then Shakespeare kind of needed to backpedal on.
Right.
And so there's a direct link between Achilles in this play and Essex, that this is like Shakespeare being like, oops,
yep,
undo.
yeah.
But then also maybe after he wrote it and put it up was like, you know what? Can we pretend this whole thing didn't actually happen? Leading to 1609, him being like, this play never happened.
Interesting.
So I think that's an interesting.
Don Draper-esque.
Exactly. So yeah, this Essex thing is a... It's a very obvious, you know, they're talking about the Greeks, but they're really talking about this guy, Essex, who is a right. pompous blowhard who screwed everything up.
Which is what Shakespeare always does. No matter who he's talking about, he's always talking about his moment in time and about the English,
mm-hmm.
right? So the other piece of bread on my sandwich theory is that in 1603, Hamlet is published. So part of me is like, people are like, what are you working on? And he's like, this Troilus and Cressida piece, when he's really spending all of his effort working on Hamlet. And then he just pumps out Troilus and Cressida in the middle.
It's just a placeholder.
Just like, oh yeah, here's that. Also, I just did this in the last month, and it's Hamlet.
Oh, this old thing?
I just kind of whipped this together, which is sort of like the Pope Benedict theory, where it's like you got to have, you know, between JP2 and Francis, you got to have someone. So they're like, let's get this guy for like a year.
Sure, the Bridge Pope theory.
The Bridge Pope theory, so also known as the Earl of Sandwich theory.
There you go. That is...
Also in 1602, New England was discovered, so go Pats.
Go Pats. This is where we identify what we consider to be the most prominent theme in the play, and particular places where you may see it come up. Dan has chosen his three favorites,
yep.
and I'm going to pick mine choice of those three for us to dig in on. So, Daniel.
Was that German?
Which part?
Mine choice.
Mine choice. to dig is just poor grammar, to dig on. So, Dan, what are our finalists for Miss Best Theme?
For Miss Best Theme in Troilus and Cressida, I have romance, heroism, and satire.
Mm.
Romance, heroism, and satire.
Let's talk about romance.
All right, let's. What brings you towards romance as a central theme for Troilus and Cressida?
So, obviously, the entire Trojan War is based off of the kidnapping of Helen, who we yes. only see for one scene in this play. But this is she has that mythical face that launched 1,000 ships.
Yes, according to Marlowe.
Real Shakespeare, you know, had to suffer through that monologue, as we see in the documentary Shakespeare in Love. So Helen, we only see for a second, married to Menelaus, run away with Paris.
Did Menelaus kill the thing? Didn't he kill a big creature in mythology?
I think that's either Ulysses or... the guy from the Iliad, or is that Ulysses?
I thought he killed the centaur.
Look, this isn't no holds freaking Ekklema, all right? It's no holds barred. I don't know.
Sorry, I rescind my question.
Not,
go on.
I'm not up on my Greeks. So, we have that love. We have Troilus and Cressida's love, which is another example of these two characters say they're in love with each other before they've really met.
Right.
And then, you know, have an evening together. And then...
Right.
It's a really weird romance that Troilus and Cressida have, right?
Absolutely.
That they both say they're in love with each other despite having barely met. Pandarus pushes them together. They have their Romeo and Juliet crazy night of passion. Yep. They yep. wake up in the morning. They swear their love to each other. Then they go off to war. And the next time Troilus sees Cressida, she's like, I'm giving up on Troilus.
Right.
So they really spend
and
less
he doesn't
than
get
a
super
day
pissed.
Together.
I mean, he doesn't get like, he doesn't go Hulk mode. He just gets like, oh.
That's a bummer, dude.
It's Romeo and Juliet. He's early Romeo.
Right. And then there's also the characters. There are a lot of the Greek generals.
Mm-hmm.
Their names are escaping me now. Or there's at least one who consistently is like, this whole war is stupid. And,
right.
you know, everyone is just lustful and just trying to right. get their grind on, and I right. think this is stupid.
Well, I do think that is a nice segue, because while, you know, the lust that's happening that propels the war, There is also that great ideal of the romanticism of the idea of war.
Uh-huh.
So if you think of romance as a theme, some of the soldiers are in love with the concept of fighting.
Mm-hmm.
And just that what, you know, it draws those bonds together. So it's a different take on romance, but it is a romantic ideal of like,
romanticized perception.
Exactly.
Yeah.
As opposed to love, but just romanticization,
yeah.
Romanticizing.
Romanticism.
Romanticism.
Oof.
Oof.
We're out of our depth.
Throw this in Cressida. So that's romance.
There you go. In this section of the show, we choose which non-title characters we would most want to play in this piece and explain why in 2 minutes or less. Yep. Dan won the coin flip before the show.
Yes!
And has elected to go first. So,
obviously.
Daniel.
Yes.
Who would you play in Troilus and Cressida?
Well, since the title character is not available, and I cannot play the character and, I would like to play Patroclus.
Okay.
This is, I know myself well enough to know that while I might fancy myself a Greek and or a Trojan warrior, I am of a slight physical stature to the point that I probably could not carry that off on stage so effectively.
You could not.
So, I think Patroclus is about as good as it gets for me. I mean, honestly, I should play Troilus, but not available. So he's the one that's lolling around in Achilles' tent, hanging out, and everyone's like, wish Achilles had his focus on, but he keeps hanging out with that dude. So I think that there's something to be played there.
Mm-hmm.
There's an interesting ambiguity. I like the idea of being a pseudo antagonist in a secondary plot. Like, that sounds fun.
Uh-huh.
Sounds like me.
Definitely.
And I do feel like, for the most part, more than most of Shakespeare's plays, the characters in this play are pretty straightforward. And Patroclus has some interesting, and you can actually, I think you can make some really interesting and provocative choices, and that would be appealing to me.
Yeah.
So for me, it's Patroclus.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Thanks.
For me, the character that jumped out to me consistently throughout is Pandarus.
Yep.
Cressida's uncle. And what I like about Pandarus is he's the comedy character. He's got a little Polonius in him, but he also has a little Boyette from Love's Labors.
Mm-hmm.
He also has a little Parolas, in that he's more put together than those guys, but he has such a trust with Cressida, and he also, you know, busts balls with Troilus.
Right.
He gets to end the play.
Yep.
In a very, you know, as I guess we're not reuniting Troilus and Cressida. Instead, Pandarus will talk about how hard it is for people that bring couples together.
To quote The Godfather, pimping ain't easy.
Is that Mario Puzo or the professional wrestler who came down to the ring with the hoe train?
The professional wrestler formerly known as Papa Shango.
Sure, of course. Played by Marlon Brando in the late 90s.
Of course.
But Pandarus also has that wooing scene that I would have a lot of fun with as a guy. You know, Dan would never get to play like a tough guy, and I'll never get to play a male ingenue. It's just not in the cards for me.
Just the female ingenue.
Okay, well, I did do a bang up Juliet in our cutting episode. I was commended for it. But the idea of coming in as a non-ingenue and basically...
A non-ingenue
and doing the, well, it's been a long day number from How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying. It appeals to me in this Shakespearean lens. So there you go. Those are our recommended roles for Troilus and Cressida. This is the section of the show where we pull our favorite phrase from the play and talk through it so that you can nod smugly and knowingly when you hear it in production. The line we chose from Troilus and Cressida is, "Boldness comes to me now and brings me heart," from Act 3, Scene 2. Let's hear the phrase in context. Our kindred, though they be long ere they are wooed, they are constant, being one. They are burrs, I can tell you. They stick where they are thrown.
Boldness comes to me now and brings me heart. Prince Troilus, I have loved you night and day for many weary months.
Why was my crescent then so hard to win?
Hard to seem won. But I was won, my lord, with the first glance that ever... Pardon me, if I confess much, you will play the tyrant. I love you now, but not, till now, so much, but I might master it. In faith, I lie. My thoughts were like unbridled children grown too headstrong for their mother. See, we fools. Why have I blabbed? Who shall be true to us when we are so unsecret to ourselves? But though I loved you well, I wooed you not. And yet, good faith, I wished myself a man, or that we women had men's privilege of speaking first. Sweet, bid me hold my tongue. For in this rapture I shall surely speak the thing I shall repent. See, see, your silence, cunning in dumbness, for my weakness draws my very soul of counsel. Stop my mouth.
And shall, albeit sweet music issues thence. And then make out city. So that is boldness. We'll spare everyone that. This is an audio-based format. Boldness comes to me now. And brings me heart from Act 3, Scene 2 of Troilus and Cressida. Dan, can you briefly give us a little context on this? Although I think we kind of have covered it.
Yeah. This is right in the middle. This is where Pandarus finally brings Troilus and Cressida together. And they have a fun little scene of romance prior. And then Pandarus brings them together. They are left alone. They do, they're awkward with each other, and Cressida basically just outsmarts Troilus up and down in that scene, and then he's like, you want to come with me? And then Pandarus comes in and is like, why are you still talking? Shouldn't you be off in bed by now? Because he's a total pimp.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, listen, Troilus, I know that it's hard for these girls to give over, but once they do, like, you have them forever. And then Cressida's like, listen, I love you. Well, then why didn't you tell me? And she's like, I did. I just didn't. I just... Now, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, I have boldness, and what it has brought me is the heart to tell you this, and the truth is, I love you.
Right. And somebody... Okay, I'm talking too much. I keep talking. You're not saying anything, so I'm going to keep talking. Please, somebody, stop me from myself.
Right. Kiss me, please.
It's a very, high school... Like, I feel like they're both 16. Do you get that impression?
It's interesting. I feel like a little... Yes... Yes, certainly high school, but I almost feel like she's a senior and he's a freshman.
Interesting.
Where she's, just because I also have, I firmly believe that she is the smartest character in this play, one of the smartest in the canon, and that Troilus is completely outmatched. Yes! And he's just completely, and he's just staring at her and is like, I want to kiss you so badly, but I also don't know what to do because I'm so awkward.
Well, I feel like that's that line, why was my crescent then so hard to win, is like absolutely said by a 17-year-old in a letter jacket, like furrowing his brow, like, well, if you were into me, why didn't you just tell me you were into me?
Right.
Like, I thought you weren't into me.
And she's like, can I please have some romance in my life? Can you
right,
please?
Exactly. Is it so much to ask?
That you might try to woo me, perhaps. I don't know. Call me old-fashioned.
Right.
But sure would like it if you brought me some roses and maybe wrote me a sonnet.
Right. But, I mean, there is something to be said. You know, it's an interesting monologue that she has here, especially on us doing this on the heels of doing So You're Going to See Taming of the Shrew.
Right.
Last month where, you know, I was won, my lord, with the first glance that ever. And then she stops herself. If I confess, and she says, if I confess much, you will play the tyrant.
Right.
I love you now, but not till now so much, but I might master it. It's interesting.
In faith, I lie.
It's interesting that she's realizing, like, all right, slow down.
Right.
Got to play a little hard. She was playing hard to get, which she basically admits before.
Right.
And now she's like, okay, slow down. Have I blabbed? You know, okay.
There are shades of, thou knowest the mask of night is on my face. from Romeo and Juliet.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a like, lot of Romeo and Juliet in this.
Totally. But in that moment, too, of like, I shouldn't have said this, but I'm glad I did. But I wish I could take it back.
Right.
Why? So I could say it to you again. Like all of those.
Right.
Moments. It's just like there's so much emotion and so much love. And honestly, it's an act three, scene two. It's smack dab in the middle of this war play.
Mm.
And it is the most beautiful, I think the most beautiful. I mean, I think we both think that's why we chose it. It's the most beautiful moment in the play.
Absolutely.
Where it's just like, here we are. Here is the moment of, this is Troilus and Cressida.
Right.
In a play that's got a lot of war.
And not a lot of Troilus and Cressida.
Not a lot. This is it.
So.
What you got, if you were listening closely, was a nice switch from Pandarus, who is in prose, to Cressida. This line brings us into verse. Boldness comes to me now and brings me heart. Prince Troilus, I have loved you night and day for many weary months. Period. For many weary months. Bump, 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 bump. Well, no guys, so hard to win. Like,
right.
There's an empty, we're missing four beats. Maybe it's before. I've loved you night and day. Period. She waits for him for many weary months. I don't know, but there's.
I think that you play that like Cressida is hoping Troilus is Romeo. And Troilus is not. Troilus is on the basketball team. And she's like, I'm going to leave you an open line here for many weary months.
Oh, I caught a Charizard.
Ah, Pokemon go down, Troilus. You have four empty beats. And instead of like picking up the line and being like, for many months have I waited for... It's like, wait, why did you play hard to get then?
God.
And then she carries
I was playing hard to get, but I was got.
Yeah, you got me. So anyways, there you go. When you hear this coming, you know, we always say that this is where you lean over to the person that you're seeing the show with and squeeze their hand.
Yep.
In this play, be warned, this is really your only chance to do that.
This is it. And it could even, if you want to be a super Shakespeare nerd, reach for that hand on those missing four beats.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Night and day for many weary months. Bump, 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 bump. Two squeezes, tiny squeezes. Done.
That's what Shakespeare left them there
Leave
for.
Leave it in remission.
So there you go.
Get out of there.
Boldness comes to me now and brings me heart. Keep an ear out for it when you go to see Troilus and Cressida. Here we will highlight the biggest practical challenge to the director in this play and share a few ideas on how it has been solved in the past. For Troilus and Cressida, I think maybe not the biggest challenge, but for the purposes of this podcast, the most interesting challenge is the stage direction Enter Paris and Helen with Musicians from Act 3, Scene 1. So, Dan.
Yes.
I see you being smug in the window. How would you solve this problem, shorthand?
How am I being... I'm looking at the script.
Mm-hmm. That is what I am doing. You have a smug and smugly look.
That is my natural face. I do not disagree with you. It just happens to be... I'm just simply reading along.
So... Obviously, the challenge is not having Helen enter. She just kind of walks on. But it is what the interesting option available to the director of this play is that Helen, who is the cause of this whole war,
right,
is only in this one scene.
Right.
And she's kind of a secondary character in the one scene she's in.
Right.
In this whole play about a war that her kidnapping
slash
elopement is the cause of. So there are a lot of ways to play with Helen in the scenes that she's not in, how you want to have her factor into the stage picture of the show.
Right. It's one of those questions, too, as a director of, you know, do we double Helen?
Mm-hmm.
Is this someone that we have already seen? Do we put an actress in a beard and have her be a soldier earlier? Or, you know... Or is this someone who is completely... we talk in the intro that how ways that we've seen this done in the past. Uh-huh. I have never seen a production of Troilus and Cressida.
I have also never seen a production of Troilus and Cressida.
No. Okay, so we're going to punt on that.
Well, I do have... I did do some research.
Who's looking smug now?
Oh, it's always me. Oh, but okay. I'm doing it intentionally. I don't naturally look this way. I'm much more handsome.
I have RSF. Resting smug face. but as a director of, Helen appears in Dr. Faustus, which I have directed a reading of. Thank you.
La-di-da.
And that was, you know, the thing that I think we wanted to go for with that was that the audience can't see Helen.
Mm-hmm.
That only the character, and doesn't work in this case because Helen has lines.
A scene, yeah.
But I just love the idea that we never see Helen's face. Mm-hmm. So I would love to have, even if she has lines, I'd love to have her veiled in some way.
Or like
or just, you know, surrounded by the musicians.
Or she's like paparazzied up. Like she's going, she has the headscarf, giant bug eyeglasses.
Totally.
Like you can't actually see what she looks like.
Right. Because that's the old, I mean, talk about Greek, the Greek idea that the power of the imagination is so much stronger than anything you could ever possibly see. My idea of what Helen looks like is very different than yours, I'm sure.
Well, I don't necessarily have any, I didn't really think about how I would stage it perhaps, but just for some reference on how modern directors have done this, she has appeared as a mannequin in a display window in 1948.
Interesting.
A carefree woman suspended on a swing throughout the performance in kind of like a German Weimar style.
Oh, nice.
In 1977. A gift package to be unwrapped like an expensive chocolate.
Oh, my God.
In 1990. And a naked playmate emerging from a sunken steam bath in 1996.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go back to liking the idea that we never see her because it's an idea about love.
Uh-huh.
And the idea that the most beautiful woman in the world is different looking to all of us. However, mm-hmm. those are also interesting, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to make a pretty, I don't know, bold, brash, one-dimensional statement.
Mm-hmm. But it's also like,
why don't we just turn into a lollipop and call it a
day?
I mean,
she was literally like wrapped like an expensive chocolate in one of them, which is basically the same thing.
No, but I think a popsicle has a much different image than a
interesting
expensive chocolate.
But it also, you know, all of those choices objectify,
right.
In a way that I guess it's a choice, you know,
yeah.
That it's like, you know, in all of those instances, it's like you stole something. You didn't sure. steal a person. You stole an object.
Oh, interesting.
If she's wrapped up like a chocolate, it's like you didn't steal my wife. You stole my literal trophy.
Right. Right.
And
what if, could it work if she came in dressed up like a Scud missile?
That's a real dated reference, I think.
It is, but as someone who grew up in that era, as we both did, the idea of like the love of war.
Okay.
And it also still has some odd, like, I don't know. Like,
or how about like, a she's weapon part of a mass USO. Destruction? Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I'm trying to bring it back to like the thing that everyone wants, that everyone's like lusts after in war. Like, what is that?
It's almost like a USO entertainer. Like,
oh, that's, yeah, I mean,
you know,
yeah.
Dressed in like, I'm picturing that like World War II, like Navy. Exactly. All I can pick, yeah. Bugle Boy from Company B.
Yeah,
that's
it.
For
I was going
our...
more like absurdism Brechtian, just like she's a giant bullet.
Bullet Bill from Mario Brothers as Helen.
That's right.
From
12th to 1st in Mario Kart all day, every day.
But it is... It's an interesting challenge to see how this director is going to take one of the most beautiful women in history,
yeah,
and put her on stage in a scene that she has to be a part of. Like, you can't hide her like you can in Dr. Right. Faust.
What you could do, I think, is just cast Trish Stratus.
A lot of wrestling references in this one.
I'm going to be tweeting this at I Am Jericho. That's why this is happening.
All right, folks, that is going to be the episode. If you found this helpful, quite frankly, if you didn't, anyways, please subscribe, rate, and review us in iTunes so we can keep bringing Shakespeare to your headphones on a weekly basis. If you have questions or comments you'd like to send our way, you can email us at noholdsbarredpodcast@gmail.com. You can tweet us at No Holds Bardcast, or you can Facebook us at facebook.com/ No Holds Bardcast. Until next time, I'm Kevin Condardo.
And I'm Dan Bullier.
Till then, I'll sweat and seek about for eases.
And at that time, bequeath you my diseases. I do.
adieu, 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 adieu.